Recited the Noble Eightfold Path, and this is perhaps the most perfect brief description of our spiritual path here together as Buddhist practitioners. Eight factors we can't delete any, we can't take any of them out. We can add things in, we can elaborate, but those things we add in are not so essential. They're more extras, supporting things, nuances, context. But the essence is all captured there in the Eightfold Path. And the path is called Noble Arya. There's something special about it. It has this peculiar quality of Buddhist teachings that it's phrased in a way which is very dry, very cool. It's not a kind of emotively inspiring passage like we find in scriptures of many religions. But in a sense, that kind of very emotive language which we can find in some places can be. Can be misleading. It's very easy when it comes to the realm of religion to be caught up in the emotions, caught up in the devotion, caught up in the guru, caught up in the whole thing, and to be swept away in a tide of emotion. Much of religious practice is in fact designed to do precisely that. The rituals, the churches, the solemn incantation of words, the incense, the smoke, the costumes, statues, decorations, all of these things lead to are meant to inspire an emotional response, resonance. The usual word we use for that resonance or emotional response we call faith. Faith. Buddhism is not a religion which defines itself as a faith. It's not a religion which makes the personal commitment to the religion to be the defining thing. So to say Buddhism is, rather than being called a faith, it's more appropriately called a path. It's a practice. Faith is part of that practice. But the mere commitment by faith does not itself take one very far along the spiritual path, according to the Buddhist point of view. Faith is one of the starting qualities, not the final thing. And the faith which we generate in Buddhism is not, we don't tend to emphasize the more dramatic or excessive shows of devotion. We tend to be a little bit suspicious of these things. And so the kind of faith which is much more useful in Buddhism is a very quiet sense of faith. Nonetheless strong for that, but very quiet, very unobtrusive. It's not a faith that wants to go around and dogmatically insist that everybody else must share the same ideas that I have. It's too confident for that. It's not a faith which is scared or threatened by reason and inquiry. It's too intelligent for that. And it's not a faith which sweeps one off one's feet and makes one forget a sense of perspective in things. It's too balanced for that. And as we look into the aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path, and we consider those things, we reflect on them, we ask ourselves, do I have this thing within me? Is this thing inside me? Am I practicing this? Do I have right view? Is my understanding of Dhamma correct? Am I clear in what I'm about? Have I given importance to this? And what happens when I do? What happens when I try to investigate and correct my views? Do I find myself getting angry and upset when other people disagree with my views? Do I find myself sticking dogmatically to views and refusing to change them in the face of evidence or argument? And do the views that I, most importantly, the views that I hold, do they actually lead to peace of mind within myself? Do they encourage the development of skillful and wholesome qualities of mind? Do they support me in what I know to be right? These are the qualities of right view. And when we investigate and we see those qualities, we have faith. This is one of the aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path. And we can investigate and see the reality of that within ourselves. And if we see an improvement in that, then we can be happy and joyful. We can say to ourselves, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's wonderful, it's marvelous, what a rare thing in the world. What a precious thing that it is in the world to find somebody who cares about the Buddha's teaching, who really wants to understand, who cares enough to ask questions, who cares enough to take the time to read the suttas, who cares enough to listen carefully when Dhamma is being spoken, to engage when Dhamma is being discussed. When we see these qualities in ourselves, we should be glad and happy. We should continue. We should do these things again and again and again. And reminding ourselves that in doing so, we are fulfilling that factor of right view. It's an essential part of our path. It's not an optional extra. Without it, we can never deeply realize the truth and find freedom. When we have that Dhamma internalized, understand the teachings, then that will inevitably condition and affect the direction that we take our life in, the direction that we use our mind in. Everybody here has experienced that. Everybody here has chosen to come here for this talk tonight, chosen to be here in this room. There's many other places where we could have been. We live in a very choice-rich society. We could have chosen so many things, yet we chose to be here. We chose to sit in this room. We chose to listen to these teachings, to share in these teachings together. And that is the direction that we're sending our mind in at this time. And in coming here, for each person here, no matter who you are, no matter how good or bad you think you are, then we all share some important qualities of mind in coming here. We all share a desire to know, a wish to understand. We all share an intention and a will towards not hurting, to harmlessness. Nobody's come here to hurt anybody. This is a safe place. Nobody's come here to get anything. Okay, there's no angles, there's no agendas. We've come here to let go. Let go of our attachments, our desires, our ignorance, all of the harmful qualities in the mind that lead us to suffering and lead others to suffering. And that's where we want to send our life. And in that thought, that recollection, we remember the second factor of the Eightfold Path, right intention, right thought, right direction. And that's what that is. Each person here has that in your mind right now. And we can see the results of that. This is what Sandiptiko Akaliko means. It means we can see the results of that. We've come here in peace. We've come here with a sense of kindness and sharing. We've come here with a sense of wanting to learn, wanting to understand. And the confluence of all of those things means we've created a peaceful and a beautiful environment dignity, grace, then we can, it's appropriate and suitable for us to share the Dhamma together. And so we reflect like that, we have faith. Oh, okay, this is what it is. This is what the Noble Eightfold Path is. This is what developing the Noble Eightfold Path is. This is what leads to Nibbana. This right here. Not something out there. This right here. And so the same with all the other factors of the path, the speech, one's actions, keeping precepts, one's livelihood. We always see those things. Oh, okay. That's what it is, keeping your precepts. Using speech in a skillful way. That's what the path is. It's not something mysterious. It's not something esoteric. It's very plain and ordinary. To be experienced, seen right here and now, and that we can see the results of right here and now. And we have faith when we see those things in ourselves, that we can understand, yes, when I use my speech in the right way, it leads to happiness for myself and happiness for others. That's the path. That's what we're here to do. Just that. And if we can do that, and we can keep on doing that, then we can bring the path to completion. Right effort. To try. Not give up. Every person here in this room has right effort. Not perfect right effort. Doesn't mean that we all try the best we can all the time. No. Sometimes we can, sometimes we're lazy, sometimes we mess up. Sometimes we give in. We might lose some battles, but we haven't lost the war yet. We're still here. We all managed to get out of bed this morning. We haven't given in yet. We're not dead yet. So this is your right effort. Trying. Trying. And especially this one of keeping on going with good things that one's attained. So whether that be if one's taken ordination, for example, then that's what that effort is. Just persevere. Keep on going, even though it may be difficult. You know, this beautiful passage where the Buddha talks about the monk who's ordained, and even though he lives every day of the holy life miserable, weeping and suffering and agony with tears running down his face, but still he keeps on going. That's right effort. Going, when you're doing something good, when you're onto something good, not to lose faith, not to lose heart, and to remember the Buddha has been here before. Whatever I've experienced, whatever I'm experiencing now, whatever dukkha there may be, whatever agony, despair, fear there is, the Buddha has been here before. I was just talking with Venerable Buhe before this evening. He's saying he heard an animal in the bush one recent night, and he was like, "Oh, what's that?" The Buddha's been there. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya, Bhayabhairava Sutta, sitting in the forest. Here's the animal. He goes, "Oh, what's that?" It's exactly the same. All of these things that we encounter in our practice, the Buddha has been through that, if not in this life, then in past lives. But he didn't give up. It's one of my favorite passages in The Lord of the Rings, when Frodo and Sam are walking towards the Mount Doom and they left all their companions behind. Everything seems so hopeless. They're in the despair in the wasteland and they're walking. They think it's impossible. How can they, just two little hobbits, make it across the land of Mordor to Mount Doom carrying the ring of power with them? And they have this discussion, and one of them, I think Sam, says, will they ever make a song about us, I wonder? Will they ever make a tale about us? And then the other one comments, I think maybe Frodo says, the only ones who are heroes, the only ones they make the songs about, are the ones who didn't give up. The ones who give up, they don't have songs written about them. So this is one of the unfortunate consequences of Buddhist worldview and Buddhist cosmology, is that there's essentially no escape. You can't ultimately give up. You can't pretend that the world isn't there. You can't pretend that impermanence is not real, that suffering is not a reality of life. You cannot pretend that death will not come. Or if we can pretend those things, we can only do it for a short amount of time. We can erect fantasies in our mind, construct delusions and distractions to take our mind from these truths. But at the end of the day, when the night draws in, and the things of the world, the things of the daylight disappear, and the things of the night come out, then that feeling will come back into our heart. And we will have in the world no refuge, no shelter. We are like Ulysses at the end of his voyage, his all his ships destroyed, his men all lost, killed, and then he is alone in the storm, naked, in the middle of the ocean, clinging to a piece of driftwood. I don't think that there's a better description of our situation. There we are. What are we to do? We're all going to die. We are all going to die. It can come as suddenly as a flash of lightning. It can come as slowly as a cancer that eats out our guts. And it grows in there. It may be growing in there right now and we don't even know it. But these things are just the details. The manner of our death is just the detail. The crucial thing is the fact of death itself. We're all going to die. What are we going to do about it? When we are facing that, what is our refuge? Do we take refuge in our sense pleasures, our enjoyments, our cup of tea? Is that going to help you? What about is having the right kind of robe? Is that going to be useful to you? Doing the right kind of work or job in the monastery, is that going to be good for you when death is staring you in the face? Eating the right kind of food, is that going to be helpful? What about doing text critical studies? Is that going to be useful for you? You can know all the different variant readings for the word for death in Pali and Sanskrit and Chinese and Tibetan. Is that going to do you any good? Is understanding the philosophy of death, is that going to do you any good? Any of those things going to do you any good? Somebody once spoke to Ajahn Chah and said that they described the process of counselling people were doing to counsel the dying. And they asked Ajahn Chah what it was like, and what he thought that practice was like. He said, well, it'd be, you know, it's a very good thing to do. He said, but it's like a man is standing up to their waist in a river of lava, a river of molten rock. And as they're standing there, molten rock up to their waist, you offer them a lolly, and you say, here's a sweet, this will take your mind off it. So let us please not forget the purpose for which we're here. Let us please not forget that realization, that understanding that we feel in the depths of our heart, in our guts, when we face the truth. Let us never falter in our application of energy and effort to overcome the defilements in our heart. Remember, in Buddhism, that's what effort is. It's not about staying up all night in meditation. It's not about the work you do or the amount of hours meditation you do or anything like that. It's about overcoming the defilements in your own heart. And it's the defilements which bring us suffering. If we are suffering, then look to those defilements. Don't look to others. Don't be blaming. Don't be criticizing. Look to our own defilements. What am I attached to? Where are my aversions? What don't I understand? Where's my confusion? And so this right effort is the effort to overcome these defilements. That's all. Any other kind of effort we do is not part of right effort. Where are those defilements? How can I overcome them? And so this right effort is something which is in a way more challenging perhaps, more threatening than, say, the earlier factors that we talked about. Calls us to a deeper application of our spiritual principles. It doesn't admit of excuses. But one thing that is reassuring about right effort and the practice of right effort is that it does bring results. And I'm sure that everyone here has experienced those results. We've all experienced a case when we had some kind of defilement, where we recognized that, we were able to overcome it, found peace and happiness because of that. That's the right effort. So we remember those times, remember those occasions. They are not superhuman moments. Practicing right effort is not something that's beyond anybody. Simply recognizing wholesome and unwholesome and trying. Not necessarily even succeeding, but trying to develop the wholesome, trying to abandon the unwholesome. That's all the Buddha asked us to do. Just to try. And he gave us his word that it is possible. He said, I did not ask you to do anything that is beyond you. I do not ask you to do what is impossible. I ask you to do what is possible. It is possible to abandon the unwholesome. It is possible to develop the wholesome. And so in doing this and in practicing this Eightfold Path, the Eightfold Path comes to its most focused and dedicated point in the practice of meditation itself. This is where everything comes together. The practice of right mindfulness, sustaining awareness with the meditation object. And right samadhi, the unification of the mind that comes when one is able to maintain the meditation object and develop it properly. And these things are not easy. They're not kind of meant for something that can be lightly dispensed, you know, or practiced in a half-hearted way. This is something which is only achievable, only doable through long, patient, careful application. That's all. Only one way of doing it. Yes, some people can develop these things quickly in this lifetime. That's because they already did all the hard yards in their past lives. The problem for them is the problem of taking it for granted. Of the people that I know who naturally have very good samadhi, maybe half of them don't take that seriously, don't appreciate it, and allow it to deteriorate in this life. So don't be worried if you think that your progress in meditation is slow. Yes, it's slow, but it's slow for a very good reason. It's slow because meditation is bloody hard. Training the mind is a very hard thing to do. It takes many years of careful and patient and slow application. That's all. Again, there's nothing special about it. There's nothing esoteric. It's not about some people can do it or some can't, or there's no special dispensation or trick or technique or anything like that. It's just simply that it is a very, very refined and subtle skill, and it takes a long time. That's all. So we just do that. It's like anything. When I was a guitar player, it took me many years to learn to play the guitar. I started when I was 11 or 12 and played guitar for maybe 15 years, practicing it every day. And at the end of that 15 years, that's interesting, it's the same amount of time I've been a monk. End of that 15 years, I was like, well, you know, if I want to become a really good guitar player, I'll probably have to practice another 6 hours a day for another 10 years. And that'll be really good. And then I'll look back at those 10 years and think, well, I'm a better guitar player than I was 10 years ago. That's how long I'm doing my life. And again, it's just how it is to develop a skill to that degree. That's the effort that it takes. It's not, you know, getting into good samadhi and developing those things. It's no easier than, say, becoming an Olympic athlete. Thousands of people manage to become Olympic athletes. It's probably a much smaller number who achieve success in meditation and samadhi. But it's just that matter of training. That's all. Patient, careful, humble, not worrying about how much you're getting and how fast it's going and whether it's better this week than last week or any of these kinds of things. All those thoughts arise to you, just throw them out. Like Ajahn Chah said, you know, if you feel diligent, just forget about it. If you feel lazy, just forget about it. Don't pay any attention to feelings of laziness and diligence, but just practice anyway. So just practice anyway, just meditate anyway. And then we have faith in this. We have faith in seeing what we have seen. We have seen. What we have realized, we have realized. What we have developed, we have developed. And what is still remains is the completion, the perfection of those things that we have already developed. So we have that quiet faith in that. Simple faith that carries us on. And it carries us on over the abyss, carries us on through the storm, carries us on over the ocean. Sustains us in the darkness of the night. It refreshes us when we feel tired. It inspires us when we feel depressed. It lifts us up when we're down. And it enables us to keep on going no matter what happens. I just don't care what happens. I just don't care how bad it gets. I just don't care what life throws up at us. We just keep on practicing. Just keep on going. So this is my talk for you this evening on the having faith in the whole path. So I offer this to you for your reflection.